You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Times Higher Education issue review podcast for the issue of the 17th to the 23rd of March. I'm Chris Havergal. I'm joined by features editor Paul Jump, deputy news editor John Morgan and reporter Jack Grove. This week, the results of the Times Higher Education Student Experience Survey are out, revealing the best universities in the country for everything from teaching to the price of a pint, as rated by students. Jack will take us through the results. With the California Master Plan for Higher Education seemingly more at risk than ever before, why is it worth protecting or even emulating? Paul is here to talk about Alan Ryan's cover feature this week. And as the publication of tenders for the future of quality assurance in England is expected, HEFCE, the Higher Education Funding Council for England, has been accused of serving up a dog's dinner of proposals. John Morgan has the latest on this. But first, the views of 15,000 students at 117 universities have been collected to give us this year's Times Higher Education Student Experience Survey. Jack, could you begin just by sort of taking us through maybe the top five? Who's best this year?
At number one is Loughborough University. Loughborough is probably the highest performing university in the whole history of this report, going on for about 12, 13 years. And they've been top most often, and they're top this year. This apparently due to their Vice Chancellor, Robert Allison. He's very keen on this idea of sort of student-staff partnerships, which we've probably heard a lot of, and some people say it's a bit of a cliche, but he really does believe that the sort of student engagement in the university is what makes Loughborough tick, and why students who put in a lot get out a lot, and he's really behind this idea.
It's not just sport then, because that's
no, not just sport. Yeah, no. I mean, sport is massive at Loughborough. It's probably like, in terms of student sport, it's number one. It's been like, it's been top of the Bucks League for the past 35 years. That's pretty amazing. Mm. But it's not just about sport. It's about they do well across a whole range of things. Lots of clubs and societies, charity fundraising. Students are asked to get involved in a lot of different things, so not just sport. But sport actually is quite important for quite a few of our top five. I mean, Harper Adams apparently that does very well on sort of student sport societies, but that's at number two in our chart. That's a new entrant. They're a specialist agricultural college, university, I should say, in Shropshire. They do very well. In third place is Sheffield, followed by Oxford and Bath. Bath is also pretty big on sport.
Sure. I mean, are there any particular factors in looking at the results as a whole that sort of you can identify particular types of universities that do well, or indeed, particular types of universities that don't do so well?
Yes. Well, campus-based universities do very well. There's five in the top 10. There's 10 in the top 20. So there's something about this model of having a sort of an environment just very much set up around students. Everything is there for them, very focused on students, rather than the sort of larger civic university where maybe like say London, which does particularly badly. Students are only a very small part of that students of what the city caters for. So maybe sort of students don't do well. The students aren't valued and sort of elevated in the same way they are on a sort of campus setup. And London does really quite badly. I think something like out of the bottom 15, like more than 10 are London institutions, and not just like sort of lower ranked universities. Some quite top ranked universities are right down near the bottom.
And that mirrors what we found when we looked at some UCAS stats recently about who'd done well and who'd done badly since the numbers cap came off. It tended to be that a lot of campus universities were among the ones sort of getting more students in and recruiting more, and it was big London institutions, particularly London post 92s, that were you know, losing numbers, so there's obviously something that is not that attractive to UK students about living in London.
Yeah, to be honest, if I...
Whatever can it be?
If I had my time again...
cost or anything, perhaps.
If I had my time again, I would have probably gone to a campus university because visiting them, they are, like, they're just so perfectly set up around students. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I wanted to go to a big city and experience that, but I think really, you know, campus university is quite a safe bet if you're wanting quite a good time and study hard, play hard.
Certainly. Well, there's plenty of data and plenty of results, lots of subcategories for you to dig into. Our new story is on page 7 of this week's magazine, but there's also a special supplement and many more details online at timeshighereducation.com. As it reaches its mid-50s, California's higher education master plan is very much going through a midlife crisis, with several of the state's universities, particularly Berkeley, facing severe financial crises. Nevertheless, our cover feature this week says there's much about the system that should be protected and indeed, you know, could be copied by higher education systems elsewhere. It's by Alan Ryan, who's an emeritus professor at Oxford and was recently a professor at Stanford. Paul, can you just sort of take us through what does Alan Ryan think is so great about the California Master Plan?
Well, he thinks it's nailed certain things that the British system, among others, has not managed to do. You know, obviously the Master Plan is... It sort of took the whole of Californian higher education and sort of turned it all into one system. With the University of California campuses at the pinnacle of that, but obviously below that you've got the state universities that are sort of specifically excluded from doing PhDs and doing what's described as pure research. And then below that you've got the community colleges. And what the community colleges offer, according to Alan Ryan, is that, you know, they offer this level of open access that the UK just doesn't have, really, apart from the Open University. You know, you can't just turn up at a British university and expect to be enrolled. But in California, you can, and obviously if you do well, you can sort of progress through higher and higher up the system until you end up at doing a PhD at Berkeley, potentially. So it's the open access, that easy transition is another element that he approves of, and just the general rationality of the system he likes. I mean, he makes the point that, which is actually a point that was made by the Lancaster Vice Chancellor a couple of weeks ago in another cover feature we had, that the UK, as Alan Ryan puts it, it says it's allowed the proliferation of universities whose pretensions outrun their ability to deliver. By which he means, of course, that there's all these post-92 universities intent on building up, you know, strong research, but in reality not really managing to do that. Obviously, in a Californian-type system, they would be designated sort of teaching-only universities, and their best students would feed into the you know, the pre-92s. In a sort of unified way. So I think that's the kind of thing that he'd like to see us do here.
Okay, but if it's so good, why does it seem to be struggling so much at the moment? Does it simply cost too much?
Yes, essentially. I mean, whether it even costs too much, I don't know, but it costs more than the state of California appears willing to pay for it. I mean, originally there weren't any tuition fees at all. In the 70s, they started introducing what were termed enrollment fees, which eventually fess up and describe them as tuition fees. And obviously in recent years, tuition fees have gone up and up, and that's largely because of the financial crisis in California. You know, whether that implies that any kind of system like that is just inherently unsustainable is another question, really. It bears a lot on what the public's willing to pay, and, you know, Ryan makes the point that the public isn't always particularly enlightened on this. There's quite an interesting graph actually in the feature that compares the changing in amounts of the Californian budget that have been spent on HE over the years compared to the amount that's been spent on prisons. They used to spend a great deal more on HE, they now spend slightly more on prisons. So, you know, that sort of tells you something about the way public priorities have changed over the years.
Worrying times, but an interesting piece, and that can be found on pages 32 to 37 of this week's magazine. Also this week we've got Anna Copeman exploring whether art schools ever had a golden age, and if they did, is it irrevocably lost? And our lead news story this week explores the expanding role of universities in the housing market. Universities in Oxford, Cambridge and London have invested £21 million in loans and joint equity schemes to help academics get on the housing ladder, David Matthews writes. But he also hears concerns that it could lead to further overheating of the housing market and could be unfair to other non-academic staff. That story's on page 6 and 7. Finally, we always like to finish these podcasts with something light. And what could be better then than the quality assurance review? Maybe light isn't the right word, John, but it's certainly long running. Appears to be reaching a pivotal stage there.
Yep, exciting news from the world of quality assurance, which, given that quality assurance is always exciting, tells you just how exciting this is. So Hefke has plans to offer up to 6 different tenders for quality assurance work, and I gather that outsourcing companies including Tribal, Capita and Serco are among those who've been approached to explore whether they could bid for the tenders, so potentially really big changes on the cards there. So we learn a little bit more about Hefke's plans. There's a note available online of a liaison meeting with Ahua where Hefke so it confirms it's going out to tender for several elements in the new quality system. And this is, it's thought to have angered the government, this approach, because by going ahead with a move to sort of contract out quality assurance in a number of tenders, that might be seen as potentially getting ahead of the government's plans for teaching excellence framework, which are going to rely on a stable quality system. And there's going to be a higher education bill, so critics have posed the question: Why is Hefke pressing ahead with this when there's a higher education bill coming up? Mm. On the other hand, Hefke is thought to be sort of very worried about the status quo, in which one of its most important statutory functions, which is to make provision for assessing quality, is being carried out by a body that it doesn't really have that much control over, an external body, the Quality Assurance Agency. Mm-hmm. So I spoke to Roger King, who's an expert in this area, former Vice Chancellor of the University of Lincoln, and he warned that we need a strong quality agency and not one neutered by having its various functions hived off through tendering. And he said this approach of parcelling out the various different functions would amount to a dog's dinner.
Strong words. I mean, just perhaps a quick point on this. I mean, Tribal, Capita, Serco. Have you got any sense how the university sector would respond to their involvement in this area? It would certainly be a very different approach to the QAA.
Exactly. It would be a very different relationship, wouldn't it? The QAA is, you've got that co-regulation aspect at present where, the QAA has student representation on its board, has representation from universities on its board. Hard to imagine that Tribal, Capita and Serco would be inviting anyone from universities or student bodies onto their board. But there's even a suggestion that these firms might have to partner with an organisation like the QAA if they were going that has sector expertise, if they were gonna do these jobs, and they're said to be. Many of them said to be looking for extra work because Ofsted recently brought schools inspections back in-house, so the outsourcing isn't happening there. So, interesting progress potentially on a number of fronts.
Yeah. So is Hefke doing the government's bidding here?
Definitely not, no.
Doesn't sound like it, does it?
No, the government is pretty annoyed about it, if you believe some accounts, and in the grant letter gave what looked like a warning shot, saying, just be careful on what you're doing on quality assurance. Mm.
Then again, contracting things out like that is, you would think, would be sort of close to the Tory mill.
You'd think that would fit with the approach, but I think the government would rather it didn't happen, just as they're developing a TEF and a bill.
Well, it certainly seems to be happening soon. The article suggests could have tenders offered at some point before Easter. That story also on pages 6 and 7 on the magazine, and you can find that and much more on our website, www.timeshighereducation.com. Online you can also comment on our stories, and you can also join the debate on all of our social media channels. You can find us on Twitter, Facebook and LinkedIn. But that's all we've got time for in this week's podcast.
You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.